I'm Margaret Feinberg, and this is the Joycast. Hi again, friends. Welcome to the latest edition of the Joycast, the happiest half hour of your week. Once again, I'm your host, Margaret Feinberg, and I managed to gain 15 glorious pounds researching and writing my new book, Taste and See, Discovering God Among Butchers, Bakers, and Fresh Food Makers. And let me tell you, it was worth every bite. Have you ever had a dinner with friends and somewhere in the middle of the meal, laughter broke out? How did that feel? Did it draw you closer to the others at the table? I bet it did, because that's how laughter works. It's like glue. It helps us stick together and bond. It's like helium that lightens our load and our spirits. The scriptures are a library of pretty serious spiritual writings, but even the Bible's authors make space for laughter in their best stories and richest teachings. When God fulfilled his promise to bring Sarah a child, she burst into laughter. The psalmist says that when we recognize God's blessings, our mouths are filled with laughter. Jesus said, "Those that weep now are actually blessed, and that God will give them the gift of laughter." Perhaps my favorite verse on this topic comes from the writer of Ecclesiastes, who says, "A feast is made for laughter." In other words, the table is the perfect place for merriment. Of course, laughter experts will tell you that not every laugh is the same as the next. There are chortles and chuckles, cackles and belly laughs, giggles and snickers. Each one has its own set of characteristics and unique psychological and physical benefits. Whichever kind of laughter you prefer, the table is custom made to express it. To explore this topic more deeply, I decided to sit down with one of my favorite friends, Liz Curtis Higgs. She's author of 31 Proverbs to Light Your Path and an incredible speaker. And she's the kind of person who, when we get together, we laugh so hard, I cry, and sometimes I pee a little. In one of my favorite parts of this interview, she teaches us the secret to being funny. So pull up a chair at our table. You don't want to miss this. Hi, Liz. I am so thrilled to have you on the Joycast.
What a blessing, friend. Thanks.
Oh, you and I, we have spoken at so many events together. We have shared so many meals around the table. I've been thinking today, I've been like, what was my favorite meal with Liz Curtis Higgs? And there was that seafood restaurant yep. that we ate at. Was that Myrtle Beach? Where was that?
It was in Myrtle Beach. It was fantastic food, great company. Beautiful view. It was all the right stuff.
It was just that point of connection. And every time I get to see you, you bring me so much joy. And I was thinking about all the times that we would gather around the table, and there is one common thread at each time that we have shared a meal, and that is laughter.
Well, it would also happen if we were, sitting in a hotel lobby together. Just about anywhere. But the truth is, there is something about gathering around food, which makes us joyful, and also sitting across from people for a length of time. You know, oftentimes, if you were sitting in a hotel lobby, you might be side by side. But at a table, you tend to engage with the person across from you. And so I always make sure, and I remember that day very well. It was Bill and Lizzie and Margaret and Leif, and I was sitting across from Leif and able to look at both of you. And so I just love that, because that's where the communication happens. And once the communication happens, well, joy is going to be right on the tails.
100%. You know, I've never really thought about that. And I'm sure some of our listeners haven't either, but strategies of how to sit well at a table. If you're walking in, maybe it's a group of four or it's a group of six. What wisdom do you have? What strategies do you have for positioning yourself and really kind of positioning people around the table for the best possible experience?
Interestingly, you would think a round table would be best, but if it seats more than six people, actually even more than four people, you're not going to be able to converse with everybody at the table. You're just too far away from them. Not to mention that they often throw a centerpiece in the middle just to make it tricky. So then you end up speaking to the person on either side of you. Bad news there is if you are turned to one person, you are turning your back on the person next to you. Mm. So I always look for small square tables if it's four. When Bill and I go out, just the two of us, we don't sit across from each other. We sit like catacorner from each other. So I can touch his hand if I need to. We can make better connection and not have to shout in a restaurant. So I always think about who is that I most want to connect with at this event, this gathering, and how can I sit in such a manner that I can? It's not because, it's all about what I get out of it. Sometimes it's a matter of knowing who needs the most encouragement. And so, you just want to be in a position to minister to them.
That is so wise. Because I think we've all had that sense when we sit down at a table and we realize maybe the people who we knew coming in are on the other end of the table. The people who maybe were set next to are not engaging. They may be just staring at their cell phone. It feels awkward. It feels forced. And I've learned sometimes to just be more open and just say, hey, is it possible? Could we switch seats, so I could see you better, or speaking up so that valuable time, that magical time around the table isn't missed.
I tend to also literally just grab somebody's hand and whisper in their ear and say, I want to make sure we sit close to each other. Is that okay with you? Because, even before you've been seated, you've already communicated this meal is important to me and not necessarily because of the food that's going to land in front of us.
When is one of the times perhaps at a table when you have experienced deep laughter? Can you think of, is there a table that you sit at, Liz, that you don't experience deep laughter?
No, but I can think of where I learned it, and that was at my family table. I'm the youngest of six by far. My brothers and sisters are 9 to 19 years older than me. So picture this little girl of about 4 or 5 with this group of teenagers around the table. All of them love to cut up. All of them love to tell stories. All of them love to say, let me tell you this funny thing I saw today. I don't know what other big families did after dinner, but our family, once the plates were cleared, nobody moved. We stayed around the table. We told stories. We carried on probably for an hour. There was nothing on television. Of course, this is long before the internet. There was nothing on TV that was nearly as compelling as listening to my brothers and sisters tell stories. They were very about, of course, it had to be funny. In my family, you had to be funny or you were asked to leave. I have no idea why this one stands out, but my brother Tom, who is in heaven now, he was passing a basket of bread. Well, it was the craziest basket you ever did see because it had a curved handle. So when you picked it up, the handle went whoop, and so did the bread. And it, like I said, this is tiny, but the visual of it, I can close my eyes. I'm right at that dining room table. Mm. I'm seated across from my brother who loved sight gags as much as I do. And of course, the key is when something like that happens, one of two things will happen. You'll either be embarrassed and make everybody feel awkward, like, oh no, the bread is now on the table, or you have fun with it. Well, my family, you had fun with it. Anything happened. It was like, first of all, you'd say, oh, I meant to do that. So it immediately took the awkward piece out of it. Oh, they were trying to be funny. Okay, well, actually, they were funny. And then you make shtick out of it. So, Margaret, you see me on the platform. That's what I always do. It's like if something happens, it's an opportunity to look for humor. And I think when you sit at a table with people that think that way, well, it just makes the meal a whole lot more fun. And I believe it's probably the food is digested better.
There's nothing like finishing up a meal and being like, at the end of it, we laughed so stinking hard.
Yeah.
That is, it's just what makes that connection and that deep glue around the table.
Yep, it's a feast.
Now, we've talked about laughter, but honestly, you've been through a season where you've been through some difficult challenges. Would you be willing to just kind of share? I want you to feel comfortable just talking maybe a little bit about the medical challenges that you've walked through.
Right. Well, 18 months ago, I got that sad news that I had endometrial cancer. Not expected. Nobody in our families had cancer. I just decided to go first as the youngest. And of course, you think, the last thing you're thinking about, well, there's going to be joy in this journey. But the truth is, 18 months into this, Margaret, I'm here to tell you, it's been, I know you're going to either shake your head or nod in understanding. There will not be anything neutral about this. It's been the best 18 months of my life. Physically, no, of course not. But emotionally and spiritually, vitally, in other words, getting really plugged in to what matters and what doesn't matter, what I need to spend my time doing and what I do not need to spend my time doing. When you face a fear like that and you sense God's victory in the fear, over the fear, whatever happens, whew, that is so freeing. And I find it far easier to laugh because I've laid down a whole lot of the things I used to worry about.
You know, we've talked about this in our, the connecting points of our journeys, but there's a lot of illusions that maybe we cling to that are shattered, and that's scary at first, and then it's incredibly liberating.
Oh yeah, like I'm in charge? Nope, not that. For me, also, any fear of death is history. You know, it's like when you prepare your heart for the possibility of moving on, then it's exciting when you don't need to just yet. But you're not afraid of it if it comes. It is wild. I've lost 3 friends to cancer in the last couple of months. And one of them I'll be speaking at her memorial service. And there would have been a time when if someone said, speak at a memorial service, I would have been like, oh, wow, no, not qualified. Don't know what to say. But I can't wait, actually, to help that group of mourning people. And I'm among them, of course. To find the joy in the situation and to celebrate the freedom that their dear loved one is experiencing. That is, you talk about gathering around the table. Oh, baby, let's go.
Now, for some of our listeners, they're walking through the midst of their own dark times, the loss, the pain. And what advice do you have for them, for those who need a little laughter?
Right. Well, first of all, hang out with people who will give you permission to laugh. Some people, if you're going through a tough time, they're almost afraid to laugh around you, like, oh, this is so serious. Well, find some friends who are over that and can rejoice with you. You know, sometimes it's a matter of going off to the movies, even if it's by yourself, just to laugh and relax and not have your issue be first and foremost in your mind. Good books, good movies help us do that, but good friends help us do that more than anything. They just have to talk about stuff other than what you're dealing with. You want to hear their fun stories. You want to know what makes their life tick. And sometimes they'll say, oh, but my life is so good right now. I don't want to talk about that. It's like, no, no, tell me, because I need to be reminded that life can be good, that joy can return.
One of the things that I remember in the midst of the struggles, and I saw you, just as you had seen me bald and struggling with cancer, and then I saw you in the same, and but your wig became a particular source of laughter. You would literally text me pictures and stories about your wig. Can you share with our listeners some of the adventures of Liz and the wig?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. There are people, women in particular, who won't get cancer treatment because it means they're going to lose their hair. Girlfriends, it is just hair. It grows back. And furthermore, you can have this fun season with the wigs. For me, it was easy to wear on the platform. It was a little trickier to wear it among friends because, you know, they knew me. They knew this was not my hair. But, you know, you finally have to get over it, Liz, and just get out there. Well, I went to, of all things, a viewing, not a funny thing ever for anybody. Though I have to say, I have laughed pretty hard at a few viewings just because you start sharing stories about the person who's gone on and they're fun. Anyway, so I get there and everybody's very serious. But they hadn't seen me in a while, Margaret. I'd been sort of hiding locally. And there they, oh, it's Liz. And they all ran over to give me a hug. Well, the first person hugged me and the wig moved ever so slightly because it was a good hug, you know? And I thought, uh-oh. Then the next person hugged and it was like, another shift. And then another. And I thought, what am I going to do? I can't, you know, it's like the part was in the back and the flippy bits in the back were in the front. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do here because I can't just lift my wig off and put it back on, you know, with the casket right there and everything. It's just so tacky. So I realized the only solution was to keep hugging my way around the room till the wig turned all the way around and came back along. Because, you know, nobody was going to say anything. Nobody was going to say something because they're all worried about offending you, and which is crazy. Just the wig becomes, it becomes fun. In fact, I'm getting ready to write a blog post about the wig thing because, again, it's that fear and then overcoming that fear. I always ask audiences, how many actually thought this was my hair? Very few hands go up. So, you know, we've already all agreed this is a wig and it's okay. You know, let's get on with life. Let's do what really matters. And of course, I always say, Margaret, people take their cue from you. If you are comfortable, they are comfortable. If you are laughing, they will laugh with you.
What about for the person who maybe right now they have something physically or emotionally or a sense of loss and they're trying to find the humor in that. How can they help maybe take that place of maybe it's a cast, maybe it's a walking stick, maybe it is some sort of medical device around their neck or their head and turn that into an object of humor. What little tips might you have for them to be able to start poking fun and making it something that is actually can be a source of laughter?
Well, of course, first you have to become comfortable with the fact that either it's temporary, and so you become comfortable with that, or if it's permanent, even more, you have to say, you know what, this is how I'm going to do the rest of my days with this extra thing. And so what is the positive stuff about that? What does it allow me to do? So first you've got to change your thinking from negative to positive before you could ever hope to see anything funny about it. So get in the groove of thinking in hopeful ways. This allows me to do A, B, C, D, E. Once we're at a place of gratitude instead of attitude about it, then I think you can begin to look for the humor. For me, it's always look in the mirror because I look in the mirror with the wig or whatever you're dealing with. And what is funny about it? Because usually there's something. And then you've got to play with that. And if you're not a person who has a natural sense of humor, you don't always look for the fun. Well, you got a friend who does. Call them and say, talk to me about this thing. What strikes you as funny about it? And of course, they'll resist and resist because they don't want to offend. If you can help them break through that and see what's funny, then people will love you for it. Because if you can make fun of something that is making other people feel a little awkward, then you set everybody free.
What do you say to the person who just struggles? Like they would love to be more funny, but their disposition, their personality. I love the wisdom of reaching out to somebody else, finding something to be funny. What else can help that person who just feels maybe a little bit tied up or a little bit bound up?
Yeah.
To become a little bit more funnier.
Right. Well, and oftentimes that bound up comes from a childhood where humor wasn't celebrated, you know, in a family where somebody was always saying, wipe that smile off your face or straighten up, get serious. And when you get that message as a child, it's real clear that humor is not okay. And that is, I got to tell you, that is hard to combat. I'm grateful that I grew up in a family where humor was currency. You know, it was like something you brought in the door and spent on the people you loved. So, you know, for us, it's as natural as breathing. I'm always looking for funny and I don't always hit it. You know, there are times I see something that I think is hysterical and I'll point it out. And absolutely everybody else goes, I don't see one funny thing about that. And you just have to let that go and say, well, bless their hearts. You know, they missed that one. but in other words, humor is a risk, I guess is what I'm saying, is there's always a risk involved. So you've got to be kind of brave to try humor. But if it does not come to you naturally, I don't think you need to beat yourself up and say, why aren't I funny? I think you just need to surround yourself with people and things that are, and give yourself permission to enter in. Some people laugh loud and long. I am certainly one of them. If you want a good audience member to carry on, you put me in the front row, baby, and I'll set the whole place off because I'm, you know, if they want to go there. But other people are not, they're just not, and they don't need to apologize for that. You just need to find people who are, and you may never become a loud honking laugher, but if you're laughing on the inside, they call it, internal, aerobic activity, and that's good for your body too.
Laughter truly is good medicine. Now, something that we always do, Liz, on the Joycast before we conclude is we ask to get our guests' favorite recipe or dish so that we can taste some of what you love and also experience the joy and the delight of that. So do you have a recipe that you want to share?
Well, I confess I'm a real fan of Scottish shortbread, but it has to be good. I've had a lot of bad shortbread over the years, and it's dry and it's crumbly and it has no flavor. To do it right, and you should be able to because basically it's flour and sugar and butter. How can you go wrong with that? But it's how you prepare it. And so I've got a very simple, I promise, I'm not a cook. This is a simple recipe for Scottish shortbread, delightful any time of the year, and such a treat with that hot cup of tea or coffee.
Ooh, yum. Oh, I know our listeners are going to love it. And the good news for all of you listening is we have Liz's full recipe for the shortbread. And all you need to do is log on to margaretfeinberg.com/joycast, where you'll find the full recipe and all the show notes and ways to connect with Liz through her writing, her speaking, her books, and more. Liz, I am so grateful. Thank you so much for being with us on the Joycast.
Big fun, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Joycast. If you've enjoyed today's conversation and you'd like to dive deeper into the unexpected joys awaiting you around your table, check out my new book and Bible study, Taste and See, Discovering God Among Butchers, Bakers, and Fresh Food Makers. These resources will help you savor your life, nourish your friendships, and embark on your greatest faith adventure. You can purchase them at your favorite retailer or margaretfeinbergstore.com. If you do, reach out to me on social media or my website and let me know what you think. Until we meet again, bon appetit and amen.